But I had an idea. If we ate bugs on the podcast.
Wasn't that Caitlin's idea?
Yeah.
Yeah, we could do that.
Are you willing to do that?
I would eat chocolate-covered bugs, chocolate-covered ants, chocolate-covered crickets. I'd definitely eat.
For shock value, just to get attention. We need to eat. We've got to eat live crickets.
Nope. Sorry, Dave.
Live cockroaches. Yeah. Live cockroaches. Yep, I'm not there either. Okay. All right. Shall we get this show on the road? Calling, 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 calling. Call the Growth Buster. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Would you munch a burger, burrito, or pizza if the ingredients include crickets, ants, worms, or cockroaches? Yes, they are edible, and apparently a much lower impact source of protein than pigs or cows. Are you willing to eat insects to save the planet? I'm Dave Gardner, director of the Growth Busters Project, spanning the globe in search of the cure for growth addiction. Why? To size our population and economy appropriately so future generations can live decent lives on a planet with healthy life support systems. Check us out at growthbusters.org. I'm joined today, as always, by Caitlin Hickman and Ben Bacher, and we are on a mission to achieve low-impact lifestyles. Would you agree?
Yeah.
I would say so.
Okay, you must. You must. Well, today on the Growth Busters podcast, the things we do for Mother Earth. Just how far are we willing to go? Well, let's have it. Are you willing to do your part and start eating bugs?
Mm-hmm. We were just chatting about this, and I think I definitely would in some forms. Yeah, like we were watching a video with cricket flour, and that's something I would definitely, I don't think is that crazy of a change to make if it tastes good. I don't know.
Yeah, Caitlin?
Yeah, I definitely would. I mean, I'm already vegan, so I'm not really helping by eating bugs because I'm already not eating animals, but I feel like I would do it to be a positive role model for other people. Who would then eat bugs? Plus, I've eaten these little protein balls that had cricket powder in them, and they were pretty good. They tasted like Tootsie Rolls. There was nothing crunchy.
Well, I wonder if it's possible from an environmental standpoint if bugs are better than any vegetables or like nuts. You know, like I wonder if bugs are better than almonds. I don't know.
They're I'm sure they're better than almonds. Almonds are pretty.
Yeah, they're like the worst.
High water intensive.
Yeah, high water. Yeah. This whole episode is not going to be about eating bugs. So if eating bugs isn't your thing, stick with us because we're going to get into some interesting things. But I do want to share that, you know, what brought the subject up. There were two things that really kind of prompted me to ask you to if you wanted to talk about this subject. And thank you for wanting to. One was this YouTube video, Ben, you mentioned, would you eat bugs for protein? And we'll put a link in the show notes so you can watch it if you want. But in that video, three gym managers do a little blind tasting. And they're served, one, a cricket smoothie with granola, 33 grams of protein. Mm-hmm. Two, mixed worm Singapore noodles.
That one scares me. But in the video, she says that it was great.
And you, I could not, if I hadn't known, I wouldn't have been able to tell. They really looked like normal noodles.
No one told me I would eat it. But if someone told me, I'm not sure.
Is that going to make you a little less likely to eat Asian food next time you go out? What's in this bowl?
No, if we had it here, I would try it.
I'm here for it. Okay. Yeah.
30 grams of protein in that dish. And then finally, cricket flour dough pizza. It looked to me like it was enough pizza for two. So don't be too impressed with the 72 grams figure for that. I think you'd have to be pretty hungry to get all 72 grams of protein from that pizza. But anyway, this video was made by Pure Gym, which is a UK company, and they don't sell the products. They partnered with another UK company called Eat Grub, which is actually a mail order ready to cook insects company.
Oh, wow.
You know, I don't know, Eat Grub, they might need some marketing assistance, whoever picked that name.
Yeah, right.
I'm not eating grubs to save the planet. I don't know about you guys. I don't know. But the other thing that brought this subject up was a recent essay by David Suzuki, who I think we all know and love, a Canadian scientist. He's a big TV star, very popular. And I get an email blast from him, I think, every week. And his most recent email said, "Save the planet, eat an insect." And that got my attention. I said, really? Is that where he's going? And sure enough, he does. He advocates reducing our environmental impact by eating insects. Because if you've been listening to this podcast or if you've been investigating sustainability for a while, then you probably have heard that eating beef, eating even eating chickens and pigs, eating meat is pretty high impact, mm-hmm. big load on the planet, a lot of carbon emissions. And there are certainly plenty of vegans around there who are hammering at me every day. Dave, the number one point that Growthbusters needs to be making is don't eat meat. Eat a plant-based diet. Hmm. And that is certainly huge. But I'm not making that my number one recommendation because I'm trying to make an even bigger change in the system, which is to get us to stop chasing and celebrating and worshiping economic growth, where you have to build and buy more cars year after year and more houses year after year, and how much money you spend on Black Friday is.
Have we had an episode since the tax plan was passed? I don't think we have.
I think it was. We talked about it because it was coming up.
We talked about the Marco Rubio, the child tax credit. But yeah. I was just
We hadn't. Why? Why do you?
I was just thinking about the economics that make it work and that made it able to pass were to balance the budget. They imagined that I can't remember how much growth they predicted, but it's some obscene number that economists say is just impossible. But yet they say that the tax plan will spur so much economic growth that with all the tax cuts they have, it'll balance out.
Yeah.
But I just thought that was just such a great example of the insane.
It was perfect. And that's one of the things that keeps us addicted to economic growth is that's the easy way to balance the budget,
right?
Even if mm-hmm. it's not going to work.
Right.
I don't think the planet's going to let the United States economy grow at that rate. And at least I hope not. But, it would have been a lot harder for them to figure out how to spend less money.
Yeah.
How to be more efficient, right. How to eliminate government waste. And probably what they would have done is just cut some really good programs because that would be easier than actually eliminate the waste and the stupid things.
Cut PBS and NPR.
Yeah. But that's why politicians around the world worship economic growth because that means more tax revenue.
Right.
And that means they don't have to work that hard.
Right. And cut popular programs.
Yeah. So I'm into the systemic thing, but I really respect anyone who gives up meat and adopts a plant-based diet for whatever reason, but especially if they're doing that to reduce their impact on the planet. And so what I did is I grew up in a family where we had meat seven dinners a week, and I have meat maybe one dinner a week now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've cut way back on the meat, but I so far have been unwilling to just completely jettison it. And dairy, yeah. I haven't given up on dairy yet. But
yeah. I think it was really interesting that this one of the sentences in this article is just really related to what you were saying, but he writes, although vegetarian diets would suffice to feed humans and drastically reduce our environmental footprint, meat consumption remains a firmly established tradition. And I think that that's interesting because I don't know if eating insects addresses the problem of meat consumption remaining a firmly established tradition. Do you think, and I feel like that's connected to our last episode when we talked about masculinity a lot, but I feel like the idea of people craving a burger or a steak, do you think that replacing that with insects would fulfill the same desire in people?
You don't think there's going to be a new book out next year called The Joy of Eating Insects?
Well, I think there could be. I just don't know if for the people who are really meat lovers, if they're going to feel that need is satiated by insects, even if it's the same amount of protein.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be an insect dish that is going to be sinfully delicious because it has insects
in it.
There
could be, Dave. There
definitely could be.
I think those are some American food biases.
Well, that's the top of the article was about the chapulines in Mexico, the grasshoppers that were, it's a delicacy. It's very expensive.
And then the French eat snails, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we eat some pretty weird things here, too. I mean, I love sushi, and that's raw fish. It's pretty weird, I feel like.
Yeah. But I'm going to confess right here, right now, once a month, a great cheeseburger. I look forward to having a cheeseburger. Once every 2 or 3 months, having a really nice filet mignon. I'm guilty.
I'm
mm-hmm. guilty.
Right.
And it's hard to imagine, wow, I cannot wait to have that.
Singapore worm dish?
Yeah, Singapore worms. Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I don't think, at least in the short term, it's going to be a complete solution. But I think even if now it could supplement a very small percentage of the population.
I almost feel it's more likely for crickets to supplement almonds for people who are already vegan than it is for crickets to supplement steak for people who aren't.
Yeah.
Well, I really wanted to talk about this because it does strike me as extreme. And for me, that begs the question, to what extremes are we willing to go to shrink our footprints? And we should be willing to go to some extremes to shrink our footprints. But let me finish my question. What extremes are we willing to go to shrink our footprints in order to avoid doing what I think would be a lot more smart and a lot more effective, and that is to stop trying to grow the economy and to encourage couples who want children to have just one child?
Mm-hmm.
We won't go there. We are going to eat bugs first. Because we are so afraid of a steady state economy and we are scared to death to talk mm-hmm. about what people do in terms of family size.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like people are doing neither of these of those things right now. But I feel like the people who are excited about insects are probably also not too scared of having a steady economy and having fewer children.
That's true. That's true. But, you know, it's interesting that we are giving up a lot of things. But most of us don't even realize we're giving it up. Because we have grown the population and because we've grown the economy, because we've grown the scale of the human enterprise. You know, year after year, there's something else that we have to ban because there's just too many of us doing it. Let me give you a few examples. Mm. Well, some of these I'm glad we banned, like Weed Be Gone. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Weed Be Gone. That's a chemical weed killer that, you know, in the 50s and 60s and even in the 70s, every homeowner went out on to keep their lush green lawn free of dandelions. They would spray Weed Be Gone on the dandelions and poof, man, they're gone. Well, really, we shouldn't eliminate the dandelions. They do a lot of good.
Yeah.
But if you want to get rid of some invasive species on your premises that's growing, you have to be more creative about it. It used to be you could just dump a chemical on it and boom. And probably even when there were only a billion of us on the planet, we shouldn't have been doing that.
Right.
But we could get away with that. You know, now you can't have 7 billion people
doing
spraying
that.
Weed Be Gone.
I feel like I'm pretty willing to give that one up.
Yep. No loss. No loss there. Okay, this one's a little harder, but probably easy for you guys still. Hot rods, sport cars, Hummers, driving fast. You know, all those things are, you know, all those things are really bad for the climate. And you guys probably wouldn't even consider in a minute doing that. But every now and then I run a, you know, I'll pass an old Corvette or a Mustang or you know, or a Hummer or something like that. And there was this car culture we had, and especially in America, especially in the 50s and 60s, where, you know, you knew what kind of car was going down the road just by what the shape of the fins were. I mean, cars had personalities, and guys, you know, who had too much testosterone fell in love with their cars. And I think we're giving that up. And you know what? I don't miss that. I think that's fine.
I don't know actually how much that's that. I think that's pretty, maybe not as you can't tell the what car it is from the fins, but I still think it's a pretty important like status indicator, and people with money love their cars.
Yeah, but I feel like now Teslas are sexier than like...
Depends where you are.
Depends who you hang in and who you hang out with.
Maybe, yeah, maybe, but like in like New York City,
true.
I don't know.
Yeah, there's a certain crowd where a Porsche is going to be more status than a Tesla.
Right.
But the cool people that you hang out with are going to be more impressed by a Tesla, I think. But anyway, there again, you know, that's too bad, but so sad, but we can live with that. Suburban living, McMansions, the big family house surrounded by an acre of green grass. There's a lot of people clinging to that, but most of us know that has to go.
Mm-hmm.
If there were 3 billion of us on the planet, we could all have big houses in the suburbs and not worry about the climate.
I'm just interested, though, when you say that most of us know this needs to go for all of these things. What? Who are you referring to?
Who knows? Yeah.
Well, why do you ask that question? Because you think there's so many people who don't?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah. I'm sort of assuming that there aren't that many people listening to the Growth Busters podcast who are driving hot rods and living in big cars in suburbia.
That's who you're referring to, I would agree.
Although, wouldn't it be great if they did? So if you are listening to this and you've got a friend who drives a Hummer and lives in a 5,000 square foot McMansion, leaves the lights on,
gas tank.
Surrounded by 5 acres.
Slash just, their tires.
You know, sneak into their house in the middle of the night.
Burn it down.
You know, grab their iPhone and subscribe to the Growth Busters podcast.
Oh, that's nicer.
Wow,
that's a lot
so
nicer.
Wholesome, Dave.
It's really wholesome.
And we will slowly infect their thinking with sustainable thinking.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that's the deal. Okay, you have an idea.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking it's interesting because this is so different than the conversation that we had with, I'm blanking on his name, but the guy who was talking about
Josh Spodek?
Maybe. The guy who was talking about how living sustainably can be, like, great. And
Yeah, that was Josh, yeah.
Because I feel like all of the sacrifices that you're talking about, well, I don't know. I don't know how they feel for some other people, but for me, all of the things that I do that I know are sustainable choices make me feel really good about myself. Yeah. So I feel like it's not, like, I'm willing to go to great lengths, but it's not all altruistic. It's also because it makes me feel good.
I knew you would bring that up, and I'm glad you did, because that's true. And I want to put a plug in. That's Josh Spodek, and he's got a great podcast, and that's pretty cool. And I also want to put a plug in for Colin Bevan, who wrote a great book called No Impact Man. We've talked about him before, and really charming documentary called No Impact Man. And Colin, I mean, that was his whole message, was that, wow, you know, my family, we set out to make all these sacrifices, and we discovered, wow, life got better. It wasn't painful. It wasn't a sacrifice. It got better. And so in some ways, I was reluctant to do this subject where I wanted to talk about the sacrifices, because most of the time, we really do want to focus on the joy of doing the right thing, even if there's some pain for, you know, if you had to give up scrambled eggs, maybe, you know.
There was some pain associated with
it. Yeah. It's outweighed by the joy of knowing that you're doing
a good thing. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of like, I feel like if you frame also actions that you know damage the environment in ways that are both unsustainable and, like, really unequal, in that other populations in other parts of the world don't even have the same opportunities to damage the environment in the ways that we do, then it's kind of the way that I see it sometimes, not that I'm, like, an angel, but it's like you could steal candy from a child, or you could not steal candy from a child. Because, like, what you're doing in the first place, it's not just, like, a neutral action. Like, it's a bad thing. It's not even doing, like, a good thing. It's just doing the not wrong thing. I don't know.
Yeah. But let's say you are uninitiated in the ways of sustainable living. You are blissfully ignorant that we are in overshoot. And just a little hint for any of you new to the podcast, we are in overshoot. The scale of the human enterprise has outgrown the planet, and there's ample evidence of that. We have ocean dead zones caused by the way we fertilize and grow crops in order to feed 6 billion of the 7.5 billion people on the planet today. We are toxifying our rivers and lakes and streams, destabilizing the climate. We're pushing countless species off the planet to make room for humankind. And the list goes on. There's no question that there's too many of us living too high on the hog. So let's say you're blissfully ignorant of that. But next year, somehow, public officials, policymakers will suddenly get wind of this and actually come to believe that we need to do something about this. And so they outlaw the big McMansion in the suburbs. You can no longer have a 4,000 square foot trophy house on 5 acres. So you're going to feel the pain. You're going to say, God, I just love that. You know, that's, I like having my privacy. I love having my show house. I love showing it off. It's my status and all those things that we talk about that we'd love to see kind of go away. But you don't know that most of the world can't have that. And by you having that, you're pretty well condemning a lot of the world to not even be able to meet their basic needs. You don't know that. Okay. But you go along and the policymakers establish that policy, not because they're worried about the 1 billion poorest people on the planet, but because they don't want to say everybody just have one kid or two kids at the most. And they don't want to say economic growth is a stupid public policy goal. We want a healthy economy. We want a steady state economy. They're not willing to do that. Does that make sense? I don't know if I've explained that.
Yeah. It's interesting because I usually don't think about, well, I guess I do. At least when I first became vegan, I thought about the weight. Like, if I accidentally left a light on, I wouldn't beat myself up because I'd be like, oh, I saved this much electricity today by not eating meat. But, comparing, like, the weight of different actions and how, having less children might enable you to have a big house if that's what you value more. It's interesting to what degree that question is helpful, because I feel like we need to sort of be doing as many of those things as we can.
Yeah. I guess in a way, I'm probably targeting this episode for the people who don't get it, who don't understand.
Right.
I mean, look at my list. Let me just rattle through some of these things that I think they're eventually going to be banned and people are going to feel pain. They're going to really be unhappy about it. Four-wheeling. for fun. Basically, I have a long list of burning fossil fuels recreationally: ATVs, water skiing, RVs, seeing the world by airplane. Now, with the exception of seeing the world by airplane, you guys wouldn't miss any of those things. I wouldn't either.
I'd miss water skiing.
I went on an ATV ride once and it was really fun.
It was, yeah.
I would really miss recreational activities. That's a big one for me. I don't really care about having a huge house or like fast car, but like water skiing is so fun.
Okay. Well, you know, I think it won't be that long before you can't water ski behind a boat that's burning gas. They'll figure out a way to do it. They'll figure out a way to power it electrically. But you know what? Let's be honest. I'd be surprised if you'd argue with me, but I don't think we can do all the things that the rich world is doing today, powered by electricity, and be sustainable either.
Absolutely not. I question how soon these things will be governed by any sort of restrictions. I mean, which is really fascinating, because if we're talking about places that we know we can make cuts, like cutting out, I don't know, recreational activities are such a luxury. But
I really have trouble seeing that happen within the next like 80 years, at least from like a government standpoint in the US. Like, there would be riots if, seriously, like, I don't know.
If people have such a hard time getting rid of guns.
Yeah. I don't know, but the world is going to change so fast and in ways you can't imagine. But just to give you an example of something from the past, wood-burning fireplaces. You know, today you cannot build a new house where we are here. And in most cities in the United States, you cannot build a house with a wood-burning fireplace.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Now, don't you just love a wood-burning fireplace? Don't you love the smell? There's no comparison in terms of romance and ambiance. You can't compare that to a gas-burning fireplace. I feel guilty even burning a gas-burning fireplace. Mm-hmm. But City of Colorado Springs, gosh, a few decades ago, they realized, wow, we have an air problem because we have 200,000 people burning wood. Mm-hmm. It was fine when there were 50,000 people in town burning wood. But nobody said, wow, this is a population. You know, we're having to ban wood-burning fireplaces because of population growth.
Right.
Yeah. They don't realize that. Right. So I think there's a lot of little things like that.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that come
and
along.
And we don't always address the biggest root causes of.
Well, we give up the freedom to jump in your car and get across town fast. You know, you have to sit in congested traffic. Very few people say, you know what? It was great back when we didn't have so many people. That was something we had to decide to give up because we weren't willing to address that. I guess I'm harping on a little bit the fact that we're unwilling to do it from a policy perspective and society-wide. We're unwilling to really talk about those two subjects, economic growth and population growth, and how unsustainable they are. But we're also, for the most part, people are afraid, you know, people just in their daily conversations are afraid to even talk about that.
Mm-hmm. And that it's a thing that doesn't occur to people yet because it's not talked about. I actually did. I had one eighth grade science project where I had to research population growth. But aside from that, when I think about my public education, we never talked about that as being related to any environmental damage. And I feel like if people thought to associate having a larger family with, or economic growth with, the environment or more people, then it would just, conversations would look a lot different.
Yeah. I've completely forgot that I really wanted to share with you 2 minutes from a film, Soylent Green. And the reason for that is, you know, eating a really good steak dinner, I could give that up. And I probably will be forced to do that at some point. But right now I have a good steak dinner, you know, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 times a year, maybe at the most. And I'm thinking if everybody who's eating meat 7 meals a day were to cut back like I did, we might not have to continue to have the debate of whether we need to all go vegan or not, maybe. Mm-hmm. Certainly there's a lot more conversation to be had about how we treat livestock. And there's, you know, actually quite a bit of debate over whether livestock raised a certain way might not be actually beneficial to the land versus just devastating to the land. So it's a complicated issue. But let's just talk about the pleasure. Well, and really it's beyond meat. It's not even just meat. So watch this 2 minute scene from Soylent Green. So Soylent Green is a 1973 science fiction film with Charlton Heston and Edward G. Robinson. In this movie, the Earth is overrun with human beings. And I think the movie is supposed to be set in like 2022 or something like that. It was 50 years or so into the future, not that far into our future. But it is a really gruesome world that they portray. You won't believe it. And there's so many people on the planet now that everybody, what they eat is they eat these rations of food wafers. You know, you don't even know what's in these wafers, but people line up in the city center when they bring in a truck of these wafers and they get their ration of wafers. And that provides them with the sustenance they need. It provides them with no pleasure. So eating a meal, no pleasure left in that. It's just like going to the bathroom, eat your wafers. And I'm not going to spoil the contents of the wafers because that's a big mystery in the film. So you'll want to watch that. But there's this scene where Edward G. Robinson and Charlton Heston are actually eating some beef stew, and they each have an apple. They have spent big bucks on the black market to get real food and just have a meal of real food and remind themselves that it used to be a pleasure. It was a sensual pleasure. Mm-hmm. I mean, in fact, this scene is 2 minutes. There's not a word spoken, and you would swear someone was having an orgasm.
I'm ready to see it.
Okay, so, and since not a word is spoken, we're not going to stop for 2 minutes and listen to them moan and groan. I'll let you. We'll play a little bit of that so you can hear that, and we'll be right back.
I haven't eaten like this in years.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So, Soylent Green, 1973, Charlton Heston. It's on Netflix as a DVD. You can't get it as a streaming. You may be able to find it somewhere else. I didn't have a chance to check Amazon Prime or something like that. But you definitely get it on DVD. And you really need to see the rest of it because it is really pretty. It's a bleak world that the people live in. All because they were afraid to talk about what is a responsible family size. They were afraid to talk about the morality of your family size decisions. Mm-hmm. And they were afraid to stop chasing economic growth. Mm-hmm. In my humble opinion. Okay. So besides giving up real food, you know, and I think that's a future that is, I can imagine that.
That'd be so sad.
You know, what's next? Well, I think it won't be that long before we probably give up golf courses, ice skating rinks, go-kart races. How about sporting events, concerts, amusement parks, bowling, TV, hot tubs, swimming pools, water parks, produce out of season?
Yeah, produce out of season. There are a lot of foods. I mean, biodiversity is getting, like worse and worse. And there are a lot of foods that are available to us now that won't be available to us. That one feels real to me and so upsetting to me because I love food more than anything else.
Meanwhile, Ben, our resident communist, I can tell he's got something on his mind.
Our resident communist? What does that mean, Dave?
Yeah, I feel like oftentimes I'm more like to the right.
But it seems like almost every episode you have some kind of good socialist idea. And I'm not saying that to denigrate you because I think they're good ideas.
No, well, I was just thinking, I think those things, like, I can't really see losing them without being like on the border. Like, I think it'll take being like on the border of catastrophe for people to give those things up.
Right.
Or be forced to give them up.
Don't think we're on the border?
Oh, we are. I do, but it's just one of those things where, like, if we already are and we haven't been forced to give them up yet. There's a great metaphor in the book Ishmael by Daniel Quinn, and he talks about how it's like we're falling off of a cliff, but we're not paying any attention while we're in the air.
Right.
And that's how it feels. And I almost think by the time it gets to that point, it's just going to be kind of irrelevant.
That's what I mean, kind of, that, like, by the point people will be forced to give up golfing in the U.S., it'll probably be like too late. I don't know.
If it's not already. That's pretty bleak.
It is pretty
bleak. There's hope. I have to believe.
But I mean, I just think because we're like wealthy and we live in America, you know, like, I just don't see those things going away until like it's like semi apocalyptic.
Right.
I don't know.
But that's really bleak.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of impressed that you didn't explain that away with a really rosy, optimistic picture. I mean, you think we're off the cliff.
A little bit.
I really mean this. I usually joke all the way through these episodes, but I'm really sorry. I really am for what we've done and left you with. I'm bummed.
Yeah. It's sad. There's an activist who I follow on Instagram, and I don't remember her name right now. I think it's Rose Pacchietti, but she was just posting about gun violence, and she wrote something that really resonated with me that I think is relevant to this. She was talking about how, like, we owe our children more than our cynicism right now. We owe them our action. And I really liked that concept, because I think when I think about the state of the environment in particular, I am pretty, pretty cynical. And I don't think that that's not justified. I do feel like we're already off a cliff, but I also just feel like it's still my responsibility to do whatever I can.
Yeah, it's not helpful.
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah. We may go down, but we can at least go down with dignity. And maybe there's a chance that that our dignified response to this, that the outcome is different than we might imagine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on a brighter note, what do you think? Do you think? I don't want to eat bugs. That's my
Dave.
Final statement.
Damn it, Dave. What happened to going out with dignity?
Yeah.
I'll probably come around, you know? I'll probably come around.
Yeah, well, if you're going to make us eat bugs, then...
You wouldn't have that in...
The pizza?
Flour? What if you couldn't even tell? I feel like
we should just bring him some pizza one day.
You know, if I was eating meat 6 days a week, the idea of doing that to replace some of that protein, that I'd probably really address that. But I'm eating so little meat already, I don't know that for me to eat cricket flour pizza is going to make a big difference.
I think that's kind of a flaw. Like, we live in America, Dave. Like, we're some of the worst people for the environment, period. You know, so I feel like just saying, like, I'm good at this one thing is like a kind of simple, like, we're some of the worst people in the world.
I told you he was a communist.
I don't think that's a communist viewpoint.
I agree.
Forgive me for playing. I respect your decision to not eat bugs,
but but I do think we are like some of the worst people in the world in terms of like our impact.
Oh, totally.
I don't know.
And so he was saying, though, it wouldn't be replacing. But if you replaced your one meat meal a week, that's still something.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what I am willing to do. I am willing to get a job at Domino's, and I'm going to sneak cricket flour into the pizza dough so that everybody else says, wow, I feel like I got enough protein yesterday. I don't need that hamburger
yeah.
today.
That's a good idea.
You do it.
Well, do you think we've milked that one?
Yep. I think so.
What's next on our agenda?
Well, I just hearing about that save the planet, like how bugs can save the planet. I just Googled save the planet, and some of the results are really funny. There's how rubber duckies could help us save the planet. Why spending more time at home could help save the planet. Wizards and prophets face off to save the planet. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting, but very relevant. Feel free to cut that
out. So we'll talk about that in a different episode.
I think that's good.
We should research some wizards.
Yeah. All right. What's next?
Lightening the load?
Let's do it.
All right.
Yeah, so something that I've been thinking about in my grocery shopping habits lately is food waste. And food waste is huge in the U.S. I think it's 1/3 of the food that's produced is wasted. And so I've just been trying to figure out ways to waste less of my food. And one of them is just buying less, going on more frequent grocery trips, or like planning meals with friends and buying less of my own produce, because I often find that produce goes bad too quickly. So I've been trying to get better at that. And also, I learned that you can really easily salvage stale bread by putting it in soup. And it's just like dipping bread in soup normally. But I mean, like, really, I had rock hard bread last night, but it wasn't moldy or bad. It wasn't even that old. I just hadn't put it in a plastic bag, so it got really hard, and I put it in soup, and it was absolutely delicious.
Or you can always make your own croutons or breadcrumbs.
True.
Good tip. What about you, Ben? Cool.
Yeah, well, one I had for me was, this is a somewhat specific one, but for all the bearded folks out there, somewhat recently I bought a little electric razor, and A, it's way, way faster than shaving with a little plastic razor, but it also helps in that you don't waste a little plastic razor every time and you don't have to use water or shaving cream. And it's way faster. It's just way super enjoyable for me. And they're like $15 on Amazon. So I guess there's waste in that, but I've had the same one for 3 years or so. So I highly recommend it.
I guess when they stop generating electricity with coal, then it'll be a really good lightning But I get it. Yep.
It's probably still better than using excessive amounts of plastic.
Yeah, throwing away a razor.
Or just everybody can stop shaving. True. Grow a really long beard.
That is possible.
So I don't think I've shared this one before. And it's interesting. I first was exposed to this, back in the early 80s, I think. I picked up some documents from a lady who was kind of a hippie kind of lady. And she gave me this stack of documents. And what I was interested in was on the front of every page, but the back of every page wasn't blank. It was something else that she had printed and used in the past, and she had just drawn a line through the back of all those pages, and I just had never seen that before. And of course, now it's a lot more common, and I am pretty obsessive about printing on used paper or printing on both sides of a piece of paper. I really feel like a failure if I just print a new piece of paper and I just print one page on one side of it. So I think my paper consumption is next to nothing. I almost never have to go buy a ream of paper at the office supply shop.
When I was younger, we used my dad's physics thesis as our printer paper.
Wow, that should last a long time.
It really did. It was so many pages.
I have something. Frequently, I don't know well in advance about Growth Buster screenings, but I actually have a couple of screenings coming up in Minneapolis in April.
No kidding. Wow. Yeah. That's exciting.
These are back-to-back, actually. On April 12th and April 13th in Minneapolis, the film will be screened, and big bonus, the director, Dave Gardner, will be in attendance to answer questions after the films.
Nice.
And I am not getting on an airplane and flying up there.
I was
going
to ask.
Just for that.
You're going to walk?
No, I'm multitasking, riding my bike. No, I need to be there for some other business anyway.
Nice.
And so I actually told the organizations when I saw that they had ordered the film, I said, hey, I'm going to be in Minneapolis, so if we can make it work. And they did. So April 12th, an organization called Heights Next in the Columbia Heights neighborhood. And then on April 13th, Transition Longfellow will be showing the film.
That's super cool.
Watch the Growth Busters website, the Growth Busters Facebook page, and we'll be sure to give you links to those if you happen to be in the Twin Cities area. Would love to see you. Well, it's all about one planet living as if we have just this one planet to sustain us, because that's pretty much
we
it.
We do.
Yep. And I think it's going to take individual action and some big changes to the system for us to accomplish that. So thank you both for helping us maybe move the needle a little bit on both of those.
Thanks for listening.
Don't forget to explore these issues and find all our podcasts at growthbusters.org. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you might use. This is Dave Gardner.
Caitlin Hickman.
Ben Bacher.
Wishing you a sustainable
day. Some may dream to paint mountains and streams, but not me. I'm a growth buster. Some may just want more, but don't know what it's for, but not me. I'm a growth buster. Don't want a solution at the cost of pollution. They think bigger is better at the cost of the weather. But no, not us. We are the growth busters. Calling, 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 calling. Call the growth busters. Whoa.